Before we get into today's episode of One Shining Podcast, want to shout out the Ringer NBA Draft Show starring the great Kyle Mann and, of course, Kevin O'Connor. The two of those guys will be doing a reaction show to the lottery odds that come out on Tuesday night. If you are all locked in on NBA lottery, you got to go check out that show. And again, the newest episode will be a reaction show to the lottery odds that come out on Tuesday night. Go check that out now.
There's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
On today's episode of One Shining Podcast, we get to talk about my favorite conversation. Yes, it goes all the way to the top. We'll talk about the battle of the brands a little bit early on this one. We got the Curry-LeBron showdown. It's a little bit later for the reactions to that, but we'll talk about the bigger picture, right, that's happening with the narrative in the NBA. We'll try to keep up with all the NBA narratives. Myself and Kyle Mann in studio today, so very fired up for that. We'll also talk about the transfer portal. It is officially closed. We'll talk about some of the biggest names still in the portal, some of the best fits that are coming out of there. And also we'll talk about Mackenzie Mbako, who decides to go play for Indiana, and Mike Woodson. Big moment for the Hoosiers. That's always fun. And the G League Elite Camp happened, and now they've got guys that are invited to the NBA Combine. We're going to get into all that. We got Kyle in the building, producer Kyle. He made the long trek back from Ocean City, Maryland just for this podcast. Kyle, how you feeling right now?
I look, feel, and sound like garbage. But first,
Woody Durham.
He takes the timeout.
Welcome back into One Shining Podcast. As always, I am your host, Tate Frazier. And not as always, I am sitting across from Kyle Mann in Los Angeles at Spotify HQ. And it's a lovely day. It feels like a flashback to March.
It does. It's very refreshing to be here, to see you in person, to see, you know, two well-groomed, handsome men look in the prime of their lives, ready to talk about some basketball, among other things. It sounds like today we got a lot to talk about. I'm ready to go, Tate. I'm amped.
I am amped, and you buried the lead, or maybe I buried the lead, but yes, Kyle, producer Kyle, is in the building. He promised our listeners on Wednesday that he was going to Ocean City, Maryland, that he would not be here for the recording on Monday. Turns out some things happened. Some producers were reached out to. They did not reach back out. And Kyle, you're a trooper. You came in today.
Yeah, I'm feeling great, guys. Thanks.
Kyle is alive. I'm not going to say he's alive and well, but he's alive. He has no voice. He is, he looked like he got fresh off the plane, but he came here. He is a trooper. You're the MVP of the show, Kyle. That's all I have to say. And maybe we'll get some story time at the end.
Let me just ramp up for a little bit.
I'm going to go ahead.
You're the Zion Williamson of the show. You're going to ramp up your voice.
I'm going to go ahead and veto the maybe that you just put in that sentence just now. We could walk into any podcasting company in the world and pitch Kyle goes to,
it's a three-day recap.
Yes, I just feel like this is
where in the world is Kyle this week? And you follow him there, you cover it, you know, it's full coverage. It's like his own reality TV show. And then we all just kind of report back and see what we witnessed. And it sounds like a great trip, just by the sound of your voice. And a four-day bender, I mean, we all know how that goes. That's tough. And Kyle, we were both born in 1993 till infinity. We're right there on the third decade. I already am there at 30, and you're coming up later in the year. So it hits you fast. So a four-day bender It's not like what it used to be.
There's a lot of napping going on.
Yeah.
A lot of napping.
Intermittent napping is the new fad that you have to have for a four-day bender. Again, we'll get into all that a little bit later, but good to have Kyle in the studio. Happy to have Kyle Mann here in Los Angeles. We're doing a lot of NBA stuff. Yesterday, you and I both came in with KOC. We did Beyond the Arc with him. We talked about, you know, the Celtics and their Game 7. We talked about, you know, the Sixers and all this sort of stuff. I want to talk about narrative. I want to talk about a storyline that I've seen happening, and it goes back to my Battle of the Brands. And in the Battle of the Brands, I mentioned Steph Curry and Nike and kind of the war that was being waged. And guess what, guys? Spoiler alert, Nike wins the war again. This was a battle, but I think they've officially won the war against Steph Curry. I am planting that flag down. I think it's real. I think it's happening. We saw a lot of tweets like, there's a Mount Rushmore basketball. Curry's top 10 for sure, but he's not on the Mount Rushmore. We see all these conversations, and it's brought up another legacy conversation. We know how this works on the internet. You bring up 2020. What's the first thing you see? Mickey Mouse's face, right? It is a bubble championship. It is a Mickey Mouse ring. Is an asterisk, right? These are all the conversations that happen when you talk about the bubble. But now we have the redemption arc. Nike does it again. We have the redemption arc of the bubble actually was the most competitive field we've ever seen in the NBA. This is the narrative that is being pushed out. It is not a Mickey Mouse ring. So I ask you, Kyle Mann, what is your thoughts as I lay this all out? Do you think that we are debunking the idea that the 2020 title was Mickey Mouse?
This serves a couple purposes for you, I think. Well, you know, the Mickey Mouse, when people say Mickey Mouse, typically they're like, eh, corny, hokey, cheesy. It's not quite the genuine article. But then that this also happened in Florida, you know, that it was in proximity to Mickey Mouse. I'm probably stating the obvious here, but I like the commitment to the bit. It's a solid bit for you, Tate. And I appreciate that you're sticking with it. In terms of these finals, like validating or invalidating that, They're slightly different teams if you want to be serious for a minute about it.
Different. I was looking at the rosters. They're completely different. That's the difference between the narrative that is being pushed now that I see from everywhere. And I just know a Nike commercial is going to come out where there's like some bubble flashbacks, you know, as LeBron is playing and it's like, you know, Father Time loses again, right? This is going to be the narrative push of this. But like you said, these are totally different teams. The Celtics, they've almost turned as a team, as a franchise, to the new LeBron in the East, where you can almost just pencil them into the Eastern Conference Finals.
Celtics fans might disagree with you about their anxieties round to round, but I don't know if it's LeBron level certainty, but it's definitely they're a team that just, they're definitely one of those like, oh, you've probably rooted for teams like this in your life. I know I have. There's a difference between teams that take care of business. They are like proactive. They're the hammer, not the nail. And they go out there and get stuff done. And then there's the, what I call, oh shit teams, which is they kind of have to mess around and get trouble a little bit to feel the pressure until they can take things seriously. And I kind of feel like this Celtics team has been like that. They've been a little bit of an oh shit team where if you give them, like me in high school, if you gave me an hour to do something, I would wait 55 minutes to, I had to feel that oh shit energy. You know, I was not the kid that could do it in the first 10 minutes. I'm guessing, Kyle, were you a hammer or a nail when it came to the schoolwork?
I was doing homework while she was collecting it. So yeah,
exactly. There we go.
I needed that. Kyle's
whispering to the kid in class that got his homework done and is bars. Asking.
And I'm like, do you have a pencil?
Yeah. Dan, look at me, Dan.
Give me a pencil too.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah,
so I'm a procrastinator as well. You know what I mean? That's just my natural MO.
You seem like you were a good student. I don't know.
I was valedictorian.
I knew it.
I can call him. I knew it.
But I still was a procrastinator. And I also, you know, in the tortoise and the hare, I was definitely the tortoise. You know what I mean? I was chilling. I was letting everybody else freak out about it. And then at the end of the day, I was a wake up at 5 a.m. and do the paper that is due at 9 a.m. as opposed to like staying up all night and fretting about it. You know what I mean? I'm like, let's get some sleep. Let's get myself settled. Let's get the brain ready. Then I wake up in the morning and I'm like frantically getting it done.
I enjoy that that regiment. In a way, you're just kind of establishing how smart we all, confirming how smart we all think Tate Frazier is. But I don't know, like the Celtics seem like a wake up at 5 a.m. right now. Now, they're getting the job done with, you're only able to get up at 5 a.m. and do the paper before if you got the talent to seal the deal. And, you know, Jason Tatum obviously came out and was just like, you know,
I'm Jason Tatum game six. You know what I mean? Yeah. I did nothing on the front end. And then I came
in. My balls are huge. Yeah. I'm Jason Tatum. Yeah.
I make five shots in the fourth quarter. And then you get to say you're top five player in the world. And then guess what? Game seven, he drops 51 points, which goes back to the narrative conversation, right? The Nike narrative is winning, like I said, because Jason Tatum is a Nike guy. Jason Tatum went to Nike University, aka Duke University. And guess what he did also? He took Steph Curry's claim to fame from the playoffs this year. Now he has the record for Game 7 scoring performance, and he did it in garbage time.
I feel like the UA thing is kind of, no offense to any UA people that are listening, Nike's a behemoth. Obviously, they're not going to get overthrown easily. It would take, it's probably not going to happen, but I feel like this has been over. You know, I feel like in 16, that was kind of the peak of the like, hey, look at these super high top Under Armour shoes. Those are kind of interesting. That's like the only time in my life I ever like seriously thought about picking up
the Curry 4s.
Yeah, picking
the
up
Curry
a pair.
The Curry 4s were that was the moment in time. And then they decided to drop the lawnmower shoes, the white, all white dad shoes. That was the end.
That was
tough. And it happened like within like a 3 month span. It was like you hit your peak, you flew too close to the sun, and it's gone.
You don't debut with the all white. The all white is the thing that it's the one that you add on top wherever. Like you take all the sort of with the colors, you want to launch with a colorway that sort of accentuates the design features, and then you come with the crispy clean platinum white, and you're like, oh, it actually
and the
looks,
all black.
It looks all good in all white too. But I like even then. And I'm not trying to further disparage Under Armour here. I guess I'm going to, you know, sort of do it. But like even then when I was thinking about getting them, my father-in-law is the play-by-play guy for Morehead State basketball. And I was like texting him. I was like, hey, can you talk to see if they have any pairs? Like I didn't want to pay for them. So I'm just saying for this has probably been over. So I guess to your point, this is just sort of an extra. This is the bully holding the runt down on the ground and saying like, stop hitting yourself. Kind of, you know, taking their hands.
Right.
Like I feel like it's been over. You know,
it's been over, and it was never even going to be anything from the start. If it wasn't for someone like Stephen Curry, he's the only one that you know was so bright of a light that everyone said, oh, and the kids love him, right? Every kid you saw was like, I want to play like Stephen Curry. Watch this. Shoots from half court. And you're like, no, is this Breaking Basketball? and it wasn't his fault. But regardless, it created this whole narrative, this whole battle of the brands. Jason Tatum takes away the Game 7. LeBron takes away this series from him. And now we're talking about, is the Warriors dynasty over? You know what I mean? These are all things that are all kind of compiling on the side of Nike. And I think since LeBron went to LA, they have been waiting for this moment in the sun and they are stomping on the grave. I mean, this is, I've never seen anything quite like it. The media blitz immediately after that game 6 ended, it was like, oh, is Curry done? Are the Warriors done? Is the dynasty over? Some people were already writing articles that it felt like they had in their drafts for 5 years and then they were putting it out. You know, I mean, it happened so quickly.
Shams did the notebook dump that people were like, yeah, this was ready after like Sacramento game 2.
Like, right.
He had it ready. Yeah.
It was down. They were down 2-0 and he's like, all right, let me just write the obit right here.
Yeah.
A lot of people put the obits out and I'm not saying that Nike funded those articles, but I'm just saying Nike approved those articles.
It goes to the top. Follow the money. Look for the person that benefits. You know, it's that thing. It's also interesting to me, too, that like there's a thing that went on with Curry and with Iverson where both of those guys struck out and ventured out and went to
AI goes to Reebok,
right.
Curry goes to UA.
But Nike always has that little thing on them where it's like Davidson in college, that you know, those Davidson jerseys that you see show up at Warriors games.
Nike
little
check.
Swoosh on there. Curry wearing, you know, the Hyperdunks and things when he was like going wild in the tournament, things like that. Iverson, as we've talked about, you still see in ads to this day, Iverson college jersey. Ooh, XI, Concord. It's like they've always got that little trump on them, as even though, you know, even though those guys went on, I mean, the Iverson brand, obviously a little more iconic culturally, I think, and still kind of hanging in there. I just don't think 20, 15 years from now, we're going to have like the Curry. How excited do you think Instagram's going to get? What do you think the hashtag trends are going to do when the retro of the Curry 4 comes out? Not much. I don't think the wave's going to be big for that.
And I don't think that shoes in general can ever sell like they did. So it's kind of like you're in this market that is already, you know, there's already been the one, right? So we're all trying to chase something that is unattainable and it's all fragmented, it's all separated, and it'll never be what it once was or what it could be. So there has to be some sort of new market share that people get into to help sell a product. I don't know what that would be. Shoes obviously make the most sense because everyone on a basketball court is wearing shoes. But LeBron James, the ability to basically manipulate the mindset of the American people at this level is a masterclass. And that is why I find him so fascinating, because the guy was an 18-year-old. He comes into the league. He already has this aura about him. And Nike and himself have delivered on it at every single checkpoint. So much so that if you're a Michael Jordan fan like myself, you're saying, I don't think I can stop the wave. You know, I don't think I can do this anymore. You know, I mean, every single time the guy does anything, it's like, take that, Michael Jordan. Look at what he's number one at now. And you're saying, we didn't say anything. What, like, we're 50 Cent. Why do you say fuck me for? You know what I mean? And that's every time that LeBron does anything in the zeitgeist of basketball. And I just think that there's nothing that you can do. Joel Embiid is an Under Armour guy. He had this moment against Jason Tatum, you know, at a lower level. Maybe he steps up and says, I'm also a pillar in this Under Armour community. Nothing, right? So just in the battle of the brands, if Under Armour came and this was their last, you know, like, little showdown, it was an L across the board. And I really had hope for them. And I think Maryland basketball with Kevin Willard is trending back in the right direction. It hurts that, you know, Notre Dame is going to move on from Under Armour. It hurts that UCLA force majeures a contract to get out of Under Armour and saying that they didn't make back what they were promised. And now they're a Jordan school, aka a Nike school. Like, the battle was happening. There were many battles along the way, but the war has been won. And you can check the box. Nike did it again. And it's happening right in front of us.
It's the Daniel Ocean thing. You know, you play the house, you know, maybe you win a couple, but the house usually wins and then something breaks right and you bet big. We haven't seen something where, you know, you beat the house. Like, no one's been able to do it. It's been a funny thing. And I was just thinking about, like, you know, LeBron's, I feel like, narrative energy, like the narrative thing, like, it hasn't been as strong, though, as Jordan. Like, I just remember growing, I feel like there's a lack of, like, commercial sort of, like, I feel like Jordan had this, like, commercial sort of through line of his career where it was just like, okay, you remember, like, in the second three-peat he had, like, for the Jordan 12s, they had that, like, that slow motion commercial. Mm-hmm. or the you know, tell me I'm older. Like, I just feel like there were those touch points throughout his career, whereas I don't know that LeBron's had the same thing. You know, I don't know that LeBron's had the same kind of, like, commercial rhythm that Jordan's career had.
But he has the stands, and I won't even call them fans. They have this ability to make sure, almost like bully you into the opinion that is right. Like, now I saw after this game, and, you know, I'm just on Twitter and I just like seeing the discourse, which is always, I find it's kind of like WWE at this point, right? You're just seeing what the fallout is, how the fans are reacting to it. But the reaction was, LeBron is the dynasty destroyer. That's what these people are promoting.
LeBron, the underdog, yes.
The underdog dynasty destroyer who's never had any help. And I think that's what I mean by it being a masterclass. It's kind of like Coach K is now revered as someone that pioneered one and done basketball in some circles. And you're saying, this is the guy that said he wanted, you know, Elton Brand to stay 4 years in college and basically, you know, ostracized Corey Maggette for saying he's going to go to the NBA after 1 year, right? But now he's the one that told Jason Tatum he had to go to the draft, even though he was only 19 years old, right?
Yeah.
These are how the narratives and the storylines can flip over time. And it goes back, like I said, to Nike. I mean, they've done a great job of, no matter what the actuality of the situation is, there's a storyline that they can connect the tissue. I don't know who the marketing team is, but they're working overtime. And they've done a great job of, even going back to Cleveland was so genius. I mean, and when he left Cleveland the second time, everyone was like, well, he deserves to leave Cleveland. You can't waste his prime, all this sort of stuff. I mean, that is genius stuff. That is something that you have to marvel at some level. You can't say, oh, that's whatever. You have to say, man, that's incredible that not only has the narrative and the marketing, but the actual basketball has matched up. You know, I mean, even in the bubble, when the bubble was getting discussed, will it happen? Won't it happen? Right. All the conversation was, well, LeBron wants it to happen. He's begging these owners for it to happen. Then he goes and plays in the bubble, and he actually wins it, though. You know what I mean? Like, he did deliver on it, which is what I think is the most impressive part.
Yeah, well, LeBron at that point is looking at his biological clock. And when you're in your 20s and you throw away a little bit of time, I don't know. I think this is something I think about as I get into, you know, I'm in the mid to late 30s zone. So I'm like, you start thinking, when you're in your 20s, you just throw stuff away all the time. You're just like, oh, I got a ton of this, whatever, whatever. When it comes to your athletic prime, I could see why LeBron's sitting around around as the, as, and we didn't, at the time, the uncertainty was the big thing. And I know you want to get more into like sort of the conditions or the parameters of that, you know, asterisk Mickey Mouse title, but I'm sure he was looking around and thinking, I don't know how long this is going to go. I don't know if I'm going to be healthy. I don't know. Like, we didn't know anything. So he was just thinking, you know, I forget what was he, 35 at that time? Mm-hmm. I could envision him thinking like, I don't know how many more of these I have. I'm sure as hell not going to piss one away just with this. We got a team here that's rolling. I want to do this. So I don't blame him for pushing to do it.
Yeah. And what does he say? Like what internally, what are they saying as their camp? They're saying LeBron has to win one title in Los Angeles, right? And that'll check the box where there can be no questions asked about why he made this move. And then he delivered it. But then there was the backlash of the haters, right? The haters are loud, Kyle. They're out there. They don't care if you won a championship, especially if it's in a bubble, because then they can say it's Mickey Mouse and you played at the ESPN, you know, little sports center and, you know, you had Disney Impact at the top. They want to see you win for ratings. All that stuff comes out, right? But let's think about it at a real level. He had such backlash from that that he and Anthony Davis kind of felt like he was coasting into the sunset of his career after that bubble championship. But then because of the backlash, they had to answer again, and they have. And that's what I'm trying to say. I'm saying I'm so impressed with the fact I've been giving LeBron a pass since he was 34. Like, how can you still expect this guy to be the number one option to do everything on the basketball court for you? But the amazing part is in a game six, he did do that. He didn't do it the whole series, but when he had to pick the moment, he can still tap into that and be that kind of player. That's amazing. That's incredible. And that is an all-time type thing that he is doing. And for Anthony Davis to be back engaged again, defending at the elite of the elite level, that's great for American basketball, and it's great for Nike. Because Anthony Davis is important.
Everything. He's a master, Kyle. Do you hear this? How he just...
It's important. It's important for everybody involved. And I'm a Team USA guy, even though they're ran by a bunch of dookies now. We need Anthony Davis.
Also a Team USA guy. We got to make it out to Colorado Springs right at some point. I feel like that's our landscape out there. Kyle in Colorado Springs out there. The drinks and the... There's a lot of just enjoying to be had out there. You know, I just... I think that's our scene, Tate. We got to get to Colorado Springs.
That's where I want to be in my career. I want to be around Team USA because I like when we can all come together for the common enemy, which is Eastern European basketball.
Hell yeah.
We have to go after that. Even though I love Team Croatia, you know, I respect Lithuania. When it comes down to it, we're USA basketball and we're top dogs for a reason. And we got to go win every single international event that happens. I don't care if it's U16. I don't care if it's U8. We got to win those games.
I get really fired up for the U8 games, personally. Yeah.
Those U8 games are different. Remember we saw those third graders that were like flexing on everybody? Get them in the system.
Get them.
That's American basketball.
American. If anything represents American capitalist mindset, it's those kids. Get them out there.
Look at their Nikes. Look at the Nikes they have on. They're ready. But yeah, just to bring it back full circle to the conversation, the Mickey Mouse title was always a joke. It was always just kind of like a little stickler point to throw at LeBron if you are one of these LeBron haters.
So you're sticking with this. You're sticking with the this was a Mickey Mouse title.
I'm sticking with it was never one, and I said it in jest.
Oh, okay. I see. All right. I missed that. I'm slow. Sorry.
No. Yeah. I will say that till I die because I am Michael Jordan's. I feel like I'm one of the defenders out here on the front lines for Jordan, but I'm tired. I don't want to keep arguing about it. I don't think that it is really a conversation, but I also respect when you look at the resume of LeBron. I mean, it's the time.
Density of it is the thing. Right. I mean, that's the thing that LeBron has on
the
a lot of people.
The wave is going to crash. Yeah. The wave is going to crash down, and you're just going to have to deal with the fallout. And with time, as I'm sure there were Wilt Chamberlain defenders or Kareem defenders that as Michael Jordan was getting called the greatest player by Bob Knight in 1984 and, you know, all these different coaches along the line, Chuck Daly, whoever it was that said he was the best player, I'm sure there were Kareem defenders, UCLA fans that are like, no, he's not.
Yeah.
Does he have an unstoppable shot? And then they leave it at that, right? So this is just the discourse in general. I think the best thing that Nike and Jordan could do as brands could have a little sit down, like kind of meeting of the minds where LeBron and Jordan, because they do respect each other. And I think LeBron has beyond an affinity for Michael Jordan. Obviously, he wears number 23. So I think if they had a little meeting of the minds and they sat down and they had a conversation and Jordan had his guard down, LeBron has his guard down, It would be amazing television. And guess who you get to moderate it? Our guy, Charles Barkley.
Brilliant.
Charles Barkley moderates it. Ernie Johnson is there to actually moderate it. And then you have Jordan and LeBron. And you kind of have this moment where we all got to be on the same side of the fence at the end of the day. This is American basketball. The horses are coming. They're coming from overseas.
The Serbian horses are coming.
They are coming. Jokic on his horse is coming. Giannis is already here. And we got to break bread. It's time to break bread. So I'm saying the Mickey Mouse title, not because of the conference finals rematch that's happening right now. I'm just saying in general, it was a fun joke. It was fun while it lasted. We got three great years out of it. I mean, I enjoyed the 3-year run. I made the joke a lot. It was always good. But let's let it be. Let's let it rest. Let's let LeBron have his moment. Let's have a fun conference finals. And as a USA basketball fan, you have to be pulling for LeBron and Anthony Davis. It's like when I watch Coach K on the sidelines of USA basketball, do you know how hard it is to pull for that guy? Hard. It's tough. It makes you sick to your stomach, but it's a greater good that is at play here, and it's USA basketball. And that is my pitch right now to everybody. Even if you hate the Lakers, even if you hate LeBron, this is bigger. This is Nike. This is USA basketball. This is what we need. We need to show up and we need to get a win.
You're finding ways to bring people together, Tate, and I appreciate that. I think that's a noble thing that you're doing.
Last thing before we move on, because I thought this was a great storyline. Jimmy Butler is also in the conference finals. I think Jimmy Butler has become the fan favorite in the NBA right now. If you talk to a casual fan that has seen Jimmy Butler play, they're like, I don't know who's supposed to win, but I like that guy. I like Jimmy. I'm riding with Jimmy's. You know, sometimes it's about the X's and O's. Sometimes it's about the Jimmys and the Joes. This is about Jimmy Butler. And I thought a great story that came out. Pat Riley went to Jimmy Butler when he came to Miami and said, I know that we have retired Michael Jordan's 23. And nobody knows why other than the respect, tip of the cap for the Miami Heat back in the day because they saw him play at his prime. But they said to Jimmy Butler, Pat Riley did, we will unretire 23, Michael Jordan, and we will give you that number and you can wear it. And Jimmy Butler said no. He will continue to wear 22. He's one echelon below Michael Jordan.
Just one.
Just one echelon in his mind. But I thought that was...
love that, though. Yeah, I
thought
that
was a great, like, one PR move for Jimmy, and two, it's the greatest subtweet maybe of all time to LeBron James from Pat Riley, who is fighting his own war against LeBron James because he's saying, you screwed me.
This shit is hard. You didn't stick it out, you know?
And you left me, and you left me high and dry, and I found a guy who's not the same, obviously, but he's pretty damn close. He's an A if you're an A+, and he's working his way up there, and I was willing to give him 23 and not you. And I thought that was one of those, if I'm Nike, if I'm the marketing department, I'm like, what did Pat Riley say?
Yeah.
What did they put out? You know, that was
I'm wondering why Pat Riley isn't running Nike. If that's a pretty, that's 4D chess move there. That was thinking ahead of that.
That was amazing.
Some epic pettiness. I love it.
So I'm at the point now where I'm like, I know we have to respect the Boston Celtics. What Jason Tatum did was amazing. But I think a Jimmy Butler, LeBron James showdown in the finals would be, I know we already saw it in the bubble, but I want to see it when LeBron goes to Miami. I want to see it when Jimmy goes to Los Angeles and the crowd can, you know, witness the Jimmy Butler experience. And I think he's the kind of guy that when he looks courtside and sees Jack Nicholson and sees all these celebrities, you know, he's enjoying and embracing that moment. So I think that is what I am to wrap this whole little Nike segment up. I think that is the Nike dream matchup. And I know they want the Celtics, but Jimmy Butler versus LeBron, that's what America needs.
Yeah. Jimmy, when he gets that little, there's some Jack parallels with Jimmy. Jimmy gets that little wry grin going, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, Jack kind of has the same thing where you're
like
just
he
like,
he knows something that you don't know.
You're like, what's going on behind those eyes? What is going on? He has that self-assuredness that is appealing. You know, you could see when he's not on your team, it's maddening. You're like, he's going to get us. And it's been pretty, kudos to the Podfather for calling this out early.
The zombie heat.
He was a sort of running around with it, with his, like, the, you know, his picket sign saying that the zombie heat are coming, and people laughed, and here they are. I mean, I have to give credit there.
I texted Bill in January. This is before I was even working here, and I asked him, because I just thought this year was so open-ended. I was like, who is the favorite in your mind right now out of the East? Because in my mind, it was like Celtics, obviously, are in the conversation. Then it was, you know, the Bucks, obviously, with Giannis. And then maybe you talk yourself into the Sixers. And I kind of wanted to see what he thought about the Sixers. And he was like, nah, Philly, no. Don't trust them. I'm like, oh, wow. I feel like they got the MVP. Harden looks like he's, you know, whatever. But he mentioned then, he was like, I just think Miami is the team if you're Boston. You're worried about Miami, seeing Miami again. And I thought he was a little out of his rocker there. And
it felt a little doomsday preppy, you know. It felt a little like, let's get, you know, let's acquire all these guards in case the end comes, that we have all these, you know, dried snacks that we can go to if the, you know, it's like a little, we'll build a bunker in case we have to play the Heat kind of a thing. And then lo and behold, you laugh at doomsday preppers, and then, you know, when the shit goes down, where are you? You're stuck outside having to fight Jimmy Butler. So I don't know. It's an interesting situation here.
What shoes does Jokic wear? Do we know?
I always said I think he should wear Air Monarch 4s. I always thought that that's what he should play in. In fact, I've always thought it'd be interesting if Jokic played just in a bathrobe and with a cigarette.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that.
I kind of think he should have like Uggs on or like pumps, like Reebok pumps. I mean, he needs to have something that's a little bit out there. I don't even know what, like, that just goes to show how Jokic is off the radar. I mean, I don't even know what brand he is. Like,
Nike Air Zoom GT.
He's wearing Nikes. All right, so look, guaranteed Nike wins the NBA Finals.
Okay.
If you want to know who wins the NBA Finals, it looks like it's going to be Nike.
Yeah, those are like high top. You know, they got a little heel technology there. Yeah, it looks like I've seen people hoop in these. It's a big guy shoe, a lot of ankle support. Mm. It looks like it's pretty indestructible. But I always thought Monarchs would be a good one for him. I think they'd sell a lot of Monarchs if they went that way.
You think Jokic could sell shoes?
You think they need help selling Monarchs?
It's true. There are dads out there. It's the dad shoe. I just think Jokic has a dad. I tweeted out, I don't know if you guys have ever seen that clip of Steven Seagal when he was like doing that kung fu demonstration.
Oh, yeah.
And the dudes were coming at him and he just like nonchalantly was throwing them by their heads. Mm-hmm. I just feel like that's kind of Jokic's play style. And I just feel like you could really marry that with like a Monarch campaign.
Yeah.
And he'd be playing in a, you know, they say they're really comfortable. You know, you're hooping out there in a lot of comfort. He's a game that just looks comfortable. It never looks rushed or you know, out over skis. It just, it seems like a good pairing for me. So, you know,
I need the Jokic Nike commercial, the definitive Nike commercial. Maybe it's something where they're like, hey, Jokic, let's play a game of horse. And then he shows up with his horses and he's confused and everyone's like, oh my God, what's going on here?
There would be something about him not giving a shit, you know,
because
I love that. I was there at that clip of him at the All-Star game where they were like, what do you think about the MVP? And he was like, well, last year I said I didn't want it and you guys still gave it to me. So this year I'm going to say I do want it. And, you know, he just has this amusing sort of like laid backness about him that I don't know. I think you could tie it to a shoe marketing campaign.
Yeah. And he also tanked the MVP this year. I mean, there is a direct correlation between the conversation around the MVP when that was being decided and voters were putting in their vote and Jokic not trying for like 5 or 6 straight games. And then, you know, all of a sudden, he's playing at the highest level possible when he needs it the most.
He's kind of the Marlon Brando of the NBA a little bit. I just feel like Jokic at the end of his career is going to be laid back with an earpiece in, and Mike Malone's going to be like, hey, high post, duh, pump fake. You know, I just feel like at some point, it's going to be interesting to see how much his laissez-faireness can continue to dominate in the NBA. I love his style. Love him as a player.
I love him as a player as well. Let's take a quick break right here, and then we will come back and talk about the transfer portal because it officially closed. There's still some big names out there, and always some good movement happening in the world of college basketball. Also, Indiana basketball, Mark Cuban making some moves happen there. We'll talk about that. Let's take a quick break, and we'll see you on the other side.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita!
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, we're back. We're talking college basketball because, you know, that's something that you come here for. And, you know, Nike is involved at the highest level of college basketball. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm just messing with everybody. We're not going to talk about Nike anymore. We're going to talk about recruiting and what's happening in the transfer portal, because one of the bigger surprise, maybe not surprise, but just a big name in our world, because we really enjoyed the Creighton Blue Jays of a year ago, thought that they were, you know, a Final Four caliber team, maybe even more. Had a lot of talent, but they've also had a lot of defectors is probably the best word for it. And one of those guys is Arthur Kaluma, who is a talented, you know, small forward, plays the four for them usually, but probably translates more to a small forward at the next level. He put his name in the portal. And let's start there, Kyle, man. How shocked were you to see that? And then we can forecast a little bit where he fits in. And I'll throw out some ideas and some places. You're not really hearing much smoke on where he's going to go, but this changes the entire makeup of Creighton in general. And obviously, they already lost Nimhard to Gonzaga.
Yeah, I was telling you, it kind of stinks for Creighton. You get this thing rolling, and you have a starting five that you could just run it back with, and you would think that they would look at what they have and say, okay, let's secure this. I don't think we have anybody that's like for sure projected to going to be like a top draft pick. I think we can keep these guys together. And then we add to it. It's kind of the thing of like, hey, do you want to come play with this team that we know is going to go? We're playing winning basketball. And it's been disrupted, you know. They lose Nimhard. Now, Kaluma potentially. But have you heard, I mean, the thing about Kaluma is, you know, big, you know, 4'3" kind of forward, long arms, kind of a powerful driver. He's a little bit chaotic, you know, doesn't shoot it super well from three, really didn't shoot it well from three in the tournament. He was like 18%, averaged about 10.8 points. I mean, he's not like the most critical guy for them. He's not the thing that like keeps it humming, but he was an important, like athletic piece for them once they kind of match up like in the higher weight classes that are going to be waiting for you there at the
end
of the season.
Exactly. It helped the airport tests for Creighton when they played the Blue Bloods and the New Bloods and the high profile teams like a UConn, who obviously the national
the layup line test too. Right. You know, the thing where you look over on the other end of the court, you're like, oh God, that guy just did a double pump, you know, windmill. What was that with two hands? That was crazy.
Yeah. Nimhard's a little bit smaller. You know, I mean, you got Baylor Shireman, who obviously, you know, a lot of people would say it doesn't really scare you on the airport test. Kalkbrenner, who's kind of a lanky, you know, tall guy, you know, so he doesn't really do that. Kaluma was the athletic freak on this team that, you know, he could guard the inbounds and he's jumping, you know, 48 inches in the air. And you're like, wow, this guy is unbelievable, right? That is who he is as a player. And the worst part about Creighton in general is like when you're in this world of current college basketball, teams are scouting you. And they're looking at you like, for example, Arizona, right? They're the Maui Invitational. They play Creighton in the championship game, and they're looking across the line. And, you know, Tommy Lloyd probably would never say this on the record, but he sees Nimhard on the other side, and he's saying, wow, they have a better point guard than us. I want him, you know? And yeah. Eventually he tries to recruit him to Arizona, and he goes to Gonzaga where his brother played. And, you know, obviously Tommy Lloyd has his connection to Gonzaga, was down to those two schools, but that's the world we live in now. So there's teams that are playing Creighton. They see Kaluma and they're saying, well, he's probably the second or third option on this team. What about if we brought him here and now he's, you know, our number one option? Or if we bring him here and we're a championship type team and he's our fourth or fifth option, we don't have to put, you know, ball responsibility on him and we can let him just kind of rely on his athleticism and do all that sort of stuff. So I look at Creighton and I almost feel bad for him because they have kind of just been poached by the bigger suitors out there. And it's crazy to think like Gonzaga and Creighton, right? They're kind of similar private schools, smaller schools, but that's what's happening in this landscape right now. And they're kind of the lowest level of the first tier is where Creighton is. And now the top tier of the top tier is trying to take your team away from you. And it's a panic button type thing. And now it'll be fascinating to see where Kaluma goes because you immediately go to Blue Bloods. We talked about Baylor Shireman was kind of a Blue Blood type player where Kentucky, Duke, all these teams want him, Kansas. I feel like Kaluma checks that box as well where I wouldn't be surprised if we get a news alert that Calipari brings him on campus, right?
Or it feels very Calipari-ish to me. I don't know that it would be a good move for them to add him, or I don't even know if they're thinking about it. But if you look at Kaluma, first thing I wanted to say too, we'll talk about Kaluma first. Like, I just think for him and his draft prospects, I don't know that like moving to another situation would really move the needle all that much for him based on what he's doing. I think it would probably be the best situation for him to be in that starting lineup in that conference that he's in, because they do play good competition in the Big East. As we saw, the Big East was freaking awesome this past year.
Yep.
And I don't, you know, if he goes into another blue, I just don't, NIL could be the one thing that you could see, but I honestly think he's probably a bigger fish at Creighton. Honestly, you move over to a blue blood and maybe you're not shining as bright. But he's somebody that's been on the radar for a while. As I've brought it before, he was a teammate with Shaden Sharp at Dream City Prep. He's a guy who's been kind of around. He just ended up at Creighton. And but I was going to say to you, too, that like, it's just a cruel ecosystem, man. I mean, it's even more cruel than the NBA, where it's like in the NBA, you know, during the offseason, there, you know, there are these contracts and there are all kinds of stipulations and there's legality to it with this. With the NIL thing, it's very like we're going to have to hit an inflection point where some of this like gets more on the books, concrete. We have more like the rules will have to evolve, because it reminds me of my wife and I. Have you ever watched that show Prehistoric Planet on Apple Plus?
I know about it. I've never watched it though. Yeah,
it reminds me of this scene where like this one dinosaur was basically like hatching these kids, and so they had this big open area where this one species was like had all these babies, and there was this other like huge species that was like sitting there with them that just is walking around and he's just plucking the babies, just like flat out just eating them. And I was like,
that's Bill Self.
I was like, this is savage. I was like, this is so demoralizing.
That
I was
is
like,
Bill what? Self. In I was the
like,
ecosystem.
Yeah, I was just like, well, this is, I was just thinking to myself, I was like, this is how you would feel if you were a mid-major. You were just like, they're coming for our guys. What are we going to do about it? They're not under contract. They're not going to be stipulated. Then they don't have to wait. So if you're, it just feeds up. Like if you're at the bottom, I know people are talking about the mid-majors and things, but they're pulling from the people below them. It's just become a feeding cycle that goes all the way to the top. And God, it's savage. It's tough.
And you had guys like, for example, Mark Sears, who goes to Alabama and plays for them this year. He was at Ohio and he went to his coach at Ohio and said, thank you for you basically giving me the opportunities. So now that I can go play it with the big leagues. Right. So it's, and you know, your coach at Ohio is looking at you and he's like, what? You know what I mean? Like I gave you this amazing opportunity and now you're thanking me as you leave me, you know, it's created this very strange relationship and strained relationships, obviously across the board in college basketball. And I think Greg McDermott, has been pretty candid about it. And he's basically said, this is the world we live in now. It is what it is. I wish that, you know, it wasn't that way, but also I'm recruiting guys off other teams as well. So I really can't play the victim, you know, because we're all doing it to each other. And college basketball has always been a handshake type deal economy. And the NBA, like you said, we got a lot of lawyers. We got a lot of legal jargon. We got a union. We got all of this, you know, red tape that's in the middle of it. And college basketball is, you know, we're a bunch of cowboys, right? It's the wild, wild west. We like this guy. We want this guy. We paid this guy. And he comes here and he plays for us now. Guess what? He changes his jersey. That's as simple as it is.
Tomorrow. No, there's no contract with the, like, it's amazing. Like, yeah.
And it lends to the situation where, you know, you don't always know where the grass is greener. Hunter Dickinson did a great job of showing us every plot of land, you know, in the field by being like, this is what Georgetown's offering. This is what Bill Self was telling me he could do. Here's what Michigan was paying me last year. He actually was a great, you know, kind of study for all of us to see what does the NIL landscape look like. And I think you're right. Kaluma now, he goes into the marketplace, he sees what the market is for himself. And, you know, at some point he may say, hey, Greg McDermott, is Kalkbrenner coming back? Because Kalkbrenner is testing the waters. We don't know if he's going to get drafted. I'm not sure where he's going to be on a board. But Kalkbrenner says, I don't like my prospects. I can probably get paid to come back to Creighton. I'll make $80,000 or whatever it is, and then plus whatever else I can get.
It'll be way more than that.
Maybe more than that, right? Yeah. I'm just saying, like, baseline, right? A lot of these teams pay them like a $40,000, $60,000, $80,000, and then the rest is on you that you can make. So he comes back. You got Baylor Shireman's already confirmed he's coming back. And then Kaluma starts, like you said, starts working in his brain, says, I have more shots, I have more opportunities, I have more of a spotlight, I play in the Big East, UConn has a chance to even repeat. All right, I'll come back to Creighton. So it's not a done deal, but it is crazy that we live in a world now where it's like you used to test the waters for the NBA market. Now you test the waters for your NIL market. And that is just the kind of the world we live in now. It's strange. It's confusing, right?
How long until high school's like that? How long until high school lets NIL creep in? Because I know that there's been some stuff. I mean, like they flirted with that. I mean, I know, well, Bronny you know, Bronny had, of course, when did he sign that deal? When did he start getting?
11th grade. I think he was a junior.
Well, yeah. So I just, man, anyway, yeah, it just, it is. It's a tough ecosystem.
And we've also seen, you know, we always talk about, I mean, obviously we just spent 30 minutes talking about the brands, but we've also seen in college, it's a little bit different because it used to be, oh, you're in the Adidas circuit, you go to an Adidas school. You're in the UA circuit, you go to a UA school, you know, all that sort of stuff. Now you have someone like Haley Van Lith, right, who's at Louisville. She's signed to Adidas. She does Adidas photo shoots. She does Adidas branding, all this sort of stuff. She goes to LSU, a Nike school, and Adidas says, we don't care. She can wear Nike on the court and be at LSU, but everything else she does, she'll be in Adidas. And we're willing to take that risk because of the profile of the team. And eventually it'll lend back to Adidas. And there also will probably be a game where Haley has like some sort of, you know, Michael Jordan-esque covering of the Nike check, right? Whatever it may be. She puts a patch for one of her friends or something. Who knows?
Yeah.
But like that's also the other part of this where it's like the player has their own brand deal. The school has their own brand deal. They can be competing on the same court against each other live in college basketball like we've never seen before. It's like guerrilla marketing, right? I mean, it's unbelievable. And then you add in the NIL part of it in general, and it's just a little bit of chaos. But he's not the only one, Art Kaluma, that's kind of in the conversation of that group. There's another guy, Julian Phillips from Tennessee, who to me has a lot of NBA potential. I think he could be one of those types of players. He put his name in the portal. Tennessee has, you know, kind of had, you know, they've had Dalton Neck decides to come to Tennessee, right? That was a big name that was in the portal. He plays small forward also. So Julian Phillips, I guess, looks and says, I'm going to lose some playing time. I'm going to go look elsewhere. Do you forecast a fit for someone? And then there's Olivier Kamwa, who we also saw in the NCAA tournament, who had a great tournament and showed some flashes. So those two guys coming out of Tennessee, they're still in the portal. And there's got to be blue bloods and other programs that are saying, I'll take a chance on a former five-star guy and give him some shots here and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, he's somebody that was on draft boards throughout the year, and I think that he sort of regressed a little bit in terms of the enthusiasm. I think people started to pick him apart, but he's somebody that I think could definitely benefit from coming back to school. I believe he's a South Carolina native, if I'm not mistaken. That could be somebody that you could potentially see them go after. We've seen them throw some bags at some folks. That would be an interesting one. But yeah, another year of college would be good for him. And Kamwa, has Kamwa had any kind of scuttlebutt on where he's headed? I haven't really heard much about Kamwa lately.
I went back through the portal just to see guys, you know, I was trying to find the biggest names that are still kind of outstanding and looking out there to see what was going to happen. And he was a name that I feel like should be talked about more, especially after the NCAA tournament. I thought that he might be a guy that gets invited to the combine potentially just because of, you know, the raw skills that we saw, and, you know, he plays up in a big moment in March, but for whatever reason, he's just still out there and still looming. And I don't know how many more spots some of these quote unquote blue bloods have either. You know, Kansas seems like they've got their fill. They figured out who they are with their group. They get Morris, they get Dickinson, right? They get Timberlake. They know what they're doing. Kentucky's the one that I still feel like there might be more moves to be made.
You would think so. They've been talking with Keshad Johnson. I don't know if that's actually gone down yet or not. There was some talk that he visited UK this past weekend. I personally don't like that fit. You know, I think that he's a guy, you know, all of his offense is like 8 feet and in. I just feel like you're getting sort of a less functional version of Jacob Toppin at that point. You got a non-shooting four. I don't love it. I'm not a fan of it. So that's kind of, I'm going to go on record and just say that. I think it's going to enable Cal to kind of do the things that he likes to do that are tough lineup wise. Just get a lot of non-shooters out there to clog things up. He's going to do what he's going to do. He's already talked about playing Hugo and Yenso. And if Oscar comes back, he'll play those guys together. I honestly don't know what they're doing. Should I do this now? I don't know. I've had a big problem with sort of the roster. I don't know whether it's Antigua or Chin Coleman or whoever it is that's been sort of like the GM going on right now. I just feel like the lack, there's been a lack of vision, honestly. We'll see. I could live to eat those words, but uh, I I don't know. For a team that has a number one class coming in, I have like a sickly. Granted, I'm kind of pessimistic in general, but I have kind of a sickly feeling, Tate. I don't know what it is. I just don't feel, I don't feel great about it.
Yeah, and you get a situation too where it's like DJ Wagner and Dillingham, like they're going to have to learn to play together. That's going to take some time to formulate. They're kind of both ball dominant guys in a way. I think Wagner can play more off the ball than Dillingham, but
yeah,
there's just going to be more questions than answers at the start. And especially if you're Calipari, where people have had a lot of questions about your roster construction over the past few years, you kind of need to hit on this one, especially when you have the number one class. And, you know, Kentucky, you know, blue blood fans, they know who this class is. They have known about them for a couple years. They have an expectation because of that number one next to their name.
What do you make of the clutch dynamic, though? There were reports that Cal flew out to LA to like meet with Rich Paul and stuff like that. That also concerns me. I'm just like, you know, if you can't get Chris Livingston to come back when it seems like everyone is saying go back to college, Chris Livingston, and it's like he would be a great fit with this team, and they're still fighting him on coming back. It just feels like politically, that's going to put a strain on them. I don't know. The clutch thing is a black box that I just kind of can't quite figure out how that's going to serve UK here.
Yeah. And if you're Rich Paul, he seems like a guy that likes the movie American Gangster. It feels like something that he watches in his free time a lot. And I know one thing that Frank Lucas said is you got to cut out the middleman. And I feel like Rich Paul's whole philosophy when it comes to college basketball is like, why are we giving these guys to the middleman? And why are we letting the middleman make decisions about their career? Like, this is not something we want to deal with. And Calipari, unfortunately, has found himself in a situation where he's basically the middleman for the clutch agenda. And that is his nightmare, because it used to be, you know, I'm head honcho, I'm the boss. It's a lot of, you know, in South Park, there's a time where they keep like having different, like, law enforcement come in. It's like, you're not the boss here. And it's like, you know, I'm the one that's in charge of the situation. That's what it feels like with Clutch, where they're just like, we are actually in charge here. And that's scary. And I don't think Calipari wants to stay in that pool.
But
it's also scary to get out of that pool, because yeah, they're going to get top players every single year. You know, it's a guarantee. So it's a double-edged sword for him. And I appreciate that he flew out to meet face-to-face, because he's probably tired of texting and emailing and talking on the phone. Everybody's big and bad over the phone.
They were afraid they were going to lose Bradshaw. That's the other thing, that Aaron Bradshaw was going to go play for USC. And I just, the whole thing about like cutting out the middleman, that is built on the basis of, we have no faith that these guys are in it for the good of the kids. That like that just sort of is undermines to me, that's stating like, we don't think that these guys have the best interest of the kids. Like, they're just in it for themselves, like saying they're the middlemen. Yeah, they do benefit, but they also do benefit the kids. I mean, we've seen over and over again. And I guess maybe that's sort of a division. There's a lot of sort of commentary when you hear about guys who played 1 year in college. And you heard DeMarcus Cousins talk about like how the NIL thing, he's like, this is right. Reparations, basically, that like all this feels no sorrow for them. It just seems like the clutch thing is all built on that. Like, you know, we don't think that we necessarily need to have these kids in college to develop, purely for that reason, that like that development, they're not seeing it as a super valuable thing. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I don't know.
Well, they're saying we can hire Drew Hanlon or whatever, you know, coach, trainer, whatever you want to call them, and they'll get them ready more so than playing in a college system where they don't even get to show their full arsenal, their full bag, or whatever they want to say. And you can argue that both, you know, you can argue that until you can't breathe, but it's also, I think there's benefits on both sides for both parties, and they both know that, so they're going to figure out a way. But Livingston, to me, it's like, if he doesn't come back, then you're in the Kaluma conversation more so, right? I mean, that you're just kind of replacing him with a more proven player. Maybe not a guy that doesn't have as high of a ceiling, but I think they have similar ceilings, in my opinion. Yeah. Even though there's the clutch agenda says he's better than Jason Tatum, so I don't know. It's somewhere in between.
We can't go into any specifics on that one for confidentiality. But yeah, like, I personally think Livingston is a better player than Kaluma, but I think basically kind of what I'm getting at too here is that I think that you hit on it too, that like going to college and things like that, and like having that experience of playing in high stakes games. You and I were chatting about this with Connor Nevins earlier, one of our podcast managers. I do think there's value in that. I do think that you can't undermine that experience of going and playing together in a team environment like that and getting. I don't know that like going with a trainer can replicate that, because we've seen, and you know, we're a brand show, we've seen the damage that can do to a brand. You know, some of these guys are just kind of off the radar, and people are like, you know, when it comes draft time, they're like, who? And you know, maybe that has a marketing impact that won't keep you in the league long term, and who gives a shit? Like, the basketball stuff is all that matters. But I do think that like being with the team, and I've made this point a lot, like, what if we had seen Scoot in, like, the NCAA tournament? Like, I think that that would have been good for his sort of brand saturation, and whether or not that would have made him a better basketball player long term, I don't know, but I do think that it would have. I personally think that it's a good, you know, if you're going to play pre-college, if you're pre-NBA, if you're forced to for that year,
yeah,
I think you might as well play in the high stakes games and get some of that resiliency it forces you to sort of like do. It's instead of like in January, are you playing OKC Blue? No offense to them. Are you going to get riled up to beat OKC Blue in a back-to-back on the road? Probably not. Whereas like if you're going to go play, you know, Carolina on the road, I feel like that's a more valuable experience.
And it creates this, in my opinion, I think it creates this kind of, when you do get to the big show with the NBA, there's almost this like relationship with fandom that is not, it hasn't been learned. You know what I mean? You don't understand how fans react. So then there's more of like this almost like disdain for the fans, right? And in college, I think once you get the wins and you feel the adulation, then when you lose, you feel the lows, right? You kind of find what that balance is, and you understand the fact that fans are fans and they're called fanatics for a reason. Like, I think of Isaiah Todd as one of those people. He's from Virginia, from Richmond. If he goes and plays for Tony Bennett for 1 year, I think that does him wonders.
And
I think it also gets him more opportunities in the NBA, because now you have advocates on your side that are connected and know certain people and have these relationships. Your coach played in the NBA, and now you have people advocating for you that are validated by the people in these circles that are in the front office. And I don't know, I think in the end, it helps you have more of a network where, and if you go to the G League Ignite or one of these places, their network is the same network, you know what I mean? And you're kind of competing with people for the same network connection. So I think in the end, the college, there's a lot of reasons. And socialization is the biggest. I mean, socialization is huge.
It is huge. It is huge. And I think the last thing I'd say, I think that the brand, the sort of individual brand thing, and I'm not trying to be like old guy yell at the cloud about this, but like the individual brand thing does sort of put a strain on submitting yourself to like accountability, which I think, and that's different player to player. Not every player is, some guys are self-motivated and they are accountable in the fact that they're competitive and they give a shit and that's great.
Like Scoot. But I think Scoot checks that box. I think he's that kind of guy.
But there's some people that like, you know, the weight of their brand against it can make them feel like, okay, well, at any moment I have this trap door that I could just go and do my own thing because my brand is so powerful. I know that these things are in line for me to go play and things like that. And I don't know that that's exactly healthy for every single player, you know? And I think that's something about the transfer portal that is sort of a strain where it's like, and from player to player, the people that are guiding them might be above board and perfect and guiding them in the right direction, but it's something that you can kind of see guys fall through the cracks, and it makes you worry since the guys are so young.
Yeah. Speaking of a guy who is taking our advice of, you know, going to a system for probably 1 year, Mackenzie Mbako, who's a former Duke commit, looked great at the Nike Hoop Summit. I thought he showed some real life. And when you look at this class, which is much maligned, everyone talks about how there's no real star in this class. I think Isaiah Collier is a star. I think Mbako is a guy who could go and be a star, and he's going to go to Indiana. Indiana's now going to have two McDonald's All-Americans on their team. The first year of the McDonald's game, 1977, they got two McDonald's All-Americans. Now Mike Woodson has two with Ware.
Who were the ones in 77? Was it, who was that?
Isaiah was 79 was when he came in. So I can't even remember the two off the top of my head, but,
gotcha.
That's a tough trivia one there. Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, I wish I had that pulled up, Kyle.
Your parents are gonna be so disappointed.
Yeah, my dad's gonna be like yelling the two names at me like through the podcast right now. But in general, the fact that Mike Woodson now has Khalil Ware, the number two transfer coming from Oregon, and Mbako to come in, and it was between Indiana and Kansas Adidas. but between those two schools, and the fact that Indiana wins this war, right? They usually lose out to the head honcho of the Adidas, you know operation. And they get McKenzie. He says that he loves everything Woodson was selling him. I think this goes back to what I thought about Woodson when they hired him. I think he has the perfect combination of the NBA, current NBA, and also the old school Bob Knight, Indiana Hoosier world. He has connected those two worlds. And he's done a brilliant job. I mean, the basketball has not quite been there, but I think that they were kind of locked in with Trace. I'm excited to see what this looks like. I think this is great for Mbako. I think this is great for Indiana. And I think this is kind of the move of the modern one and done, right? I mean, you don't have to go to Kentucky or Duke. Maybe you go try to chart your own path. And also you can get people that are players to come in the portal so that you don't go there by yourself, right? I mean, we saw what happened with Gigi Jackson out of South Carolina. he needed help. He needed something. Meechie Johnson wasn't going to do it for him, even though Meechie played pretty well. But
yeah.
I like the situation and the setup for Ibaka. And I like that Indiana replaces Trayce Jackson-Davis with another McDonald's All-American that's coming in as a freshman. And I don't know. I just see that and I'm saying that's a good model for the current game. You bring in a five-star in the portal. You bring in a five-star from high school. You try to marry them together and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I think Mbako is a guy that it'll be a nice setting for him. Like I think that Woodson, like you said, NBA experience. It's a good conference, good competition. I think it's a good move for him, and it's interesting too that you want to talk about like playing. Mbako played on an EYBL team that had Wagner and Bradshaw on it. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that's played around a lot of talent. That's why I was wondering if he would maybe end up going to a blue blood, but. Yeah, in the end, it'll be a good fit for him. I like it.
Yeah, I like it too. Just a few more things before we get to shout-outs, because I hope, Kyle, do you have your voice back? Are you getting it back?
Working on it.
He's working on it.
That sounds better, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does sound better. Quickly, I wanted to shout-out 8 players. The G League Elite Camp happened this weekend. There was conversations. Guys like Marquise Noel, who we fell in love with during the NCAA tournament, obviously. He was there, had a great first day, not so great second day. But there were 8 players that were called up to the actual NBA draft combine. And 2 I wanted to highlight, or actually 3 I wanted to highlight. One being our guy, an OSP, or Serge Ibari Rice.
Oh, baby. This guy's a sniper. I thought of you when I saw it. Yeah,
this guy's a sniper. I have been a fan. I think he's a great 6 man. Obviously, he was at Texas. Ended up playing starter minutes. But I can see him, when I look at Serge Ibari Rice, I see him as not only a winning player, but a nice piece on a winning team in the NBA. So he gets invited to the combine. And you said you thought of me when you saw that. Did you think about all the beautiful shots that you saw him make in the NCAA tournament? Because he just feels like he checks the box. I mean, maybe I'm crazy, but I like players over potential half the time.
Yeah, I mean, bucket getter. I wonder defensively if he's going to get picked on. Pretty slight frame. You know, I think he's probably a guy, you take a flyer on him in the second round. I mean, that could happen. But he's already going to have one of the most devastating pump fakes in the NBA from day one. We even saw it during the G League Combine. He got his long, it's almost like a Jokic kind of pump fake, and he got that going. Yeah, I mean, I could see a team taking a flyer on him in the second round. But all the things I said, kind of withstanding, that are going to be questions for him.
I'm excited to see him at the combine. Another guy that I was excited for, Kendrick Davis out of Memphis at SMU. I think he ended up being maybe the all-time scorer at SMU. He's in the conversation, maybe top 2, top 3, whatever it is. But he was incredible at SMU. Transfers to play for Penny for 1 year. The Memphis team, lest we forget, I mean, they had Florida Atlantic on the ropes. And
they called timeout.
They did call timeout. Right? I mean, and I'm a Penny guy, so they definitely called timeout. They were cheated. It was wrong. It goes all the way to the top. You know, all the things. But Kendrick Davis is a player I really like. I think he's a true point guard. I think he has a great high basketball IQ and just knows how to score the basketball. Kind of reminds me of like Chris Clemens came out of Campbell a few years ago, ended up playing for the Rockets. I'm not sure if he's still in the Rockets.
He was G League Rockets. I don't know. Well, actually, I think he got some burn with that last iteration of the Harden Rockets.
Yeah, right. And they did a good job with Tate was obviously on the G League team too. So they do a good job with that group. But in general, I like Kendrick Davis's game. He gets called up for the combine. And then the last guy, which I think is fascinating for forecasting next year for a certain team, Clemson, who was on the outside looking in with the NCAA tournament, PJ Hall, a guy who is very talented, a guy who got some Tyler Hansbrough comps. I wonder why, but he got those when he was at Clemson. He's a really tough player. And he and Hunter Tyson of Clemson, both out of the 8 players asked to come to the combine, they both get invites. That is a little worrisome for Clemson, but it's also a good sign because I think both those guys are going to come back to Clemson. And if they do, that is if you're trying to find teams that are sleeper teams next year that could maybe make a run to the Sweet 16 or whatever it may be, I think PJ Hall and Hunter Tyson could be those guys.
Is he going to have a COVID year, Hunter Tyson? Because he played 5. Is he able to come back for a 6?
I think he has a COVID year, yeah, okay. Right? Or maybe his 5th was his COVID year, so maybe he's out of the conversation. But PJ Hall can definitely come back.
Yeah.
He can definitely come back, and I think he will come back. And if PJ Hall does come back, you're talking maybe preseason ACC player of the year. I know Filipowski fans will go crazy over that, but, I mean, what if we have a PJ Hall-Filipowski showdown? That'll be some good ACC basketball. We'll all be locked in for that.
Battle of the Whites, right? Yeah.
It's going to be a good one. But shout out to those guys. I'm excited for the combine. We also have the draft lottery that's coming up tomorrow night. I know you and KOC are doing a reaction show about that. quickly before we get to shout outs, is there one fit for Wembanyama that you like that makes sense to you that you're saying, and why is it not the Hornets? Because I feel like a lot of people don't want the Hornets to have him.
Yeah, I was cracking up at you talking about why you didn't want him to go to the Hornets. I just think it's pretty amazing. It's a level of cynicism hitherto unseen. The fact that Tate is afraid that they're going to let him down, and he's already just kind of forecasting, like, just don't, we're going to disappoint you. It's sort of like when you meet somebody you really like and you think, oh, me, you know, and they're so damaged that they're like, I'm going to hurt you. Like, right. You just move on. Just go on. Find somebody that can love you better.
It's the Dewey Cox. You don't want no part of this, Dewey.
You know what I mean?
And he's like, what is it?
I think I want a part of that.
I think I do want a part of that.
Love that movie. No, but there are a few fits that I do like. I think the two that come to mind immediately. I mean, hypothetically, I like the idea of the Spurs just because of their international kind of like they have a history of doing that. I love Pop working with him. I think that Wimby would make a lot of their players make sense if you put him with like a really solid defensive group like Devin Vassell and then, Trey Jones and then Keldon Johnson and then Jeremy Sochan. But then I think I really also like on the basketball side of it, the Pistons. I think the Pistons are a really cool fit for him. If you think about Cade and Jaden Ivey, and then I think that he could be a great lob threat. I think you could play him and Jalen Duren together. But then the other one that I brought up was Indiana. I think that Indiana would be fun. So there's a couple guards there that I would have fun pairing him with Haliburton and Wimby, and then Cade and Wimby. I just think because both of those guys, I don't think are true primary offensive options on like a playoff level team. But they're very good. It's not like a major diss because there's not many of those players in the world. I think putting Wimby with those guys could create a really, really, fearsome thing to reckon with in the East specifically.
And how cool would it be 20 years after the Pistons passed on Carmelo, they get Wembanyama? You know what I mean? That's something that's fun.
20 years later, get it right. Yeah.
Get it right this time. Let's get it right, Detroit. So I think that's always fun. All right, let's get the shout outs. This is something that I just saw. Brett McMurphy put this out to the world. Apparently, the quote unquote magnificent seven ACC schools are shopping themselves right now to see if they can get out of their agreement with the ACC. And the seven schools are Clemson, Florida State, Miami, North Carolina, NC State, Virginia, and Virginia Tech. And there are some conversations they might be talking to the Pac-12.
Ooh.
And if people remember.
That's a shame. I was thinking about maybe being a Florida State guy.
Well, what do you mean?
I'm a St. John's guy. But I mean, if they're going to bounce, I don't know. You want them out of there? Is that what you're saying?
It's the Magnificent Seven in the ACC. They can go anywhere.
Maybe I see you doing some damage in Tallahassee, Kyle. I see that.
You got family in Tallahassee.
Yeah, yeah. I got a place to stay.
He's got a place to stay. I have been to Tallahassee once in my ACC life. It was everything and more. It was Myrtle Beach. Right? Don't you think?
Sure. I just got back from Ocean City. Yeah. I don't know anything about these.
He's not been out in the
daytime.
I'm
only a Long Beach Island guy, so we'll see. I like to hit them all, but what do you think if I just go St. John's basketball, Florida State football? Nobody's going to get mad at me for that, right?
Yeah, just put it in your bio. I think that's important. Like on Twitter, you know what I mean?
Everyone needs to know. Huh?
I like when you have the four teams in the bio. They have like from four different parts of the U.S., you know what I mean?
You're like Lakers, Yankees.
Chiefs, Lakers. You know, you're like, what?
Cowboys. So you know what you're getting into here, yeah.
I think that would be good. So shout out to them. I personally, my favorite season is conference realignment season, where just like they're floating ideas and they're trying to move all the pieces. That's why the portal is important, to keep all like the Greg Sankeys of the world occupied, so they're not trying to do conference realignment and make power conferences. But here we are. It's back. The ACC, the Magnificent Seven. Shout out to them. Kyle, are you ready for your shout out? Do you want to shout out Ocean City? Can you tell us a little bit? Like, what happened?
I can't wait.
Yeah. You left me on Wednesday.
Wednesday. I did the show Wednesday.
Yeah, you did the show Wednesday, yeah. And then you said you would not be here on Monday. So how did that happen? How did you get back early?
Well, I hadn't booked a return ticket yet.
So you were going to stay in Ocean City.
I liked the feeling of it. I didn't know everyone was going places. And I was like, you know what? There's no way to fly into Ocean City. Nobody's going south to like Baltimore. So I was like, all right, I know everybody's driving up Sunday morning. So I was just like, I'll figure it out when we get there. And then I looked at the flights. I'm like, yeah, you really probably should have figured this out beforehand. Because, now that all that was left is like one stop, two stops out of like, you know, cities like Philly or whatever. So whatever, I got that done. And it was 13 hours of travel yesterday. But 13 dudes all together. I put them all in a group text months ago, and then I just recused myself. I was like, this is who I would invite if I could invite everybody. I know we've all got lives. I'll see you guys whenever.
I'll see you guys in Ocean City.
Well, I didn't pick Ocean City, and that's what everyone kept asking me. He's like, hey, why are we in Ocean City, man? The guy who I put in charge just went to Ocean City for the first time last year in like July and was like, yeah,
Ocean City. This is it. Yeah, Kyle's going to love this place.
Made the call.
So, yeah, it was painfully clear that it was like the season probably starts 2 weeks from now.
A little bit early.
It was a little
Memorial Day feels like the start.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. It was clear that we were there a little early, and he just was like, well, I had a great time. So, yeah, we'll bring like 13 dudes. And it was clear that by the end of the weekend, the two groups weren't so hot on each other.
Oh, my God. You basically had like a side
effect. We had factions. Yeah, the New York City guys, they thought the Poughkeepsie guys were weird. The Poughkeepsie guys were like, what's up with these fucking weirdos? But there was no fights.
You're floating between them as the peacemaker? Or
I really was like, I don't want to hear any of this shit.
So it's basically six versus six, and then you're the one in the middle. It's like tug of war.
New York City
versus New York State.
Yes, my brother was there. He was like, y'all gonna stop calling me upstate. And I was like, oh, but my brother didn't say that. That was the other guys. But that was interesting. The factions didn't fight each other. There was like a big smack that happened the next morning.
The morning,
9:30 in the morning, and the
a
New York,
slap?
Yeah, between the Poughkeepsie guys, one of the dudes smoked in the house, and that was like the one rule. And he showed up after us, and he sent us a video of him smoking in the house. It was like, I mean, could you be any more dumber? And he was like, I didn't know. So anyway, big smacks at like 9:30 in the morning.
Someone just walked up to him and just smacked.
He said
him.
Good morning to everybody. We're on the back porch, and he just bang.
Did he haul off and smack him?
I would say he hauled off. Then the other dude was like, all right, hold on. Bang, smack the back. And we're all like, this porch is not big enough for us to be doing this.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was...
Nice little slap fight
The
there
New York City guys were like speechless. They were like, I think one of those guys had to kill the other one, right? I mean, that was crazy. So that happened, but we moved past that. Went to the casino.
This is your own version of American Gangster.
Went to the casino. Shout out to Ocean City Downs, I think it's called. That was good. My buddy got kicked out right away, but we didn't leave.
That was smoking.
This is the New York City guy. He was just visibly drunk. I guess you're not supposed to, like, whatever you see on the craps tables in the movies, not supposed to be, you know, messing around with the dice. You know, there was like somebody next to him. He's like blowing the dice. And he was like, sir, no. Hey, anything you see in the movies, don't do it. And
I didn't realize that.
I don't know. And they were like, all right, you got to go. So we got kicked out of the casino. Shout out to Secrets. Secrets was really great. It was like 5-6 bars in one.
That sounded like a strip club.
One thing I got, I didn't want to go, but the one thing I got from all the folks on the internet was, don't worry about Ocean City strippers. Don't even think about it. And I was
great.
I didn't want to go to a club. That's what I said. No strip clubs, no clubs if we could avoid that. So no strippers. Secrets was great. Bearded Clam I found was the best dive bar. That was great.
Wow.
I mean, what a ride.
Quite a name.
It was great. Yeah, no, it was definitely... It's definitely what you think.
Did it live up to the name?
There's a bunch of titties on the wall.
Okay.
So, it was, I had a great time. Beers all around. It was good. Made it back. And it was really just nice to see those guys. And I'm glad it all worked out.
Yeah. And I'm glad that they came together at the end. You know, it's kind of like, it reminds me of that picture where it's like the Crip and the Blood and they're hanging up both their flags next to each other. That felt like that for Kyle's bachelor party. That's
on the last day. I mean, they were both coming up to me separately. Like, I really fucking hate those guys. Like quietly, and I was like, yeah, they told me they hate you too.
Yeah, don't worry, you're not alone in your hate. That probably got some respect between them, you know what I mean? That they were like, we both hate each other.
Well,
you
know? They hated guys, different guys in other groups more too. So they tell the other guys, like, that guy fucking sucks. And he was like, yeah, I fucking hate hanging out with him, but you know, we got to do it.
Kyle.
Yeah, so you'll get to see all this come to fruition at the wedding. That'll be great.
I can't wait to be at the wedding. I really can't. I talked to Jim Cunningham today on the phone. And he was asking me questions, you know, just gym things, just going through his, you know, Rolodex of conversation points that he could throw at me. One thing I did want to ask you, and we were talking about this, when you got home last night, you have the rabbits at home. Do they have names? We were just talking about dog. You know, you go back, you see your dogs, you're excited. When you see the rabbits at home, are you like, what's up, Johnson? What are their names, and do you address them as
first
such?
Thing I do, let out a big sigh.
Okay.
And they're still there.
Okay.
And then, yeah, I know the names now.
What
the
are the names?
The last time I didn't know the names.
I don't want to put you on the spot.
Yeah, no, I could do this. The mom, it's Winona, after Winona Ryder.
Okay. Love that. Love Beetlejuice.
One of the dudes is Harley. Another dude's name is Florence. And then there's Topanga, like the canyon, not after the love of my life.
Oh, not after. Wow.
Yeah, she was very clear about that.
Not like Boy Meets World.
Yeah, well, whatever. I guess she's a big fan of Topanga Canyon. And the last one, oh, shit, maybe I don't know them all. Alistair. Boom.
Oh.
Boom.
Well, that's cool. I'm glad that you got back safely. You called me on the phone yesterday in Detroit. Like, you had no voice at that point. And you were like, I'm in the airport in Detroit. We got no producers for One Shining Podcast. We were here watching Game 7, so I basically was just like, we're just going to punt this. We're going to let Kyle.
You weren't really interested, I could tell you. I wasn't getting the vibes that you were going to tug on that line I threw that maybe we punt. And I was like, you know what? I'll just do it then.
No, that,
I'll and just
that, and that's
it.
What I wanted to confirm, that you're the best in the business.
Oh,
you know
my God,
I mean?
Yeah.
Like he is coming off that kind of weekend where you're trying to merge groups. That's what I get stressed about, even the idea of trying to, like, merge groups. Even when we had my 30th birthday party, it was like work people, friend, you know, it's like, sure. I'm always stressed about it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm a middle child, so I always kind of have that anxiety in me of, like, especially, and it's very amplified whenever you're with, like, groups that you try. I'm just kind of pollinating, you know, like, kind of just,
you're
like,
checking in.
Yeah, I'm always checking in. I do that regardless.
Yeah, you're like, you meet Thomas, oh, you right. love Ellie, you know.
That
yeah.
is a little insane, even for, like, a party, but, I mean, 4 days, it's like,
And you're staying together.
What the fuck?
Yeah, right. It's almost you get roommate syndrome, right? Because yeah. then someone doesn't put a plate away or smokes in the house, and you're like, am I going to have to fight this guy? I mean, is this what it comes yes. down to?
And the guy who, you know, and it's the classic, the guy who rents the Airbnb constantly reminds everybody
who rented
the Airbnb.
This is his house now.
It's like, whose fucking bottle cap is that? And we're right. like, oh, man, come on.
Yeah.
It's like that dude pissed on the porch already. You're worried about a bottle cap. Come on.
A lot of social contracts come into play in those yeah. situations. A lot of people have their own little, you know, ideas about how things should go.
And it was a bachelor party, you know, with a budget. So it's not like everybody had their own rooms. There's a couple snores in there.
Oh,
got a hilarious
boy.
Video I got to show you about that.
I can only imagine. You got air mattresses on
struggling.
The ground.
No. There was beds for everybody, but there was like one room with four bunk beds. Ooh. That was a little tight. So
sounds like camp. Camp in Ocean yeah. City.
It was like camp. I was just waiting for the brawl. Never
bachelor camp. Yeah. I don't want to hear the bubble people complaining about travel and stuff when Kyle, you know, Kyle schleps out here just to do a podcast for us. I just think, you know, that's the heart of a champion. You do what you got to do. You rise to the moment when it calls for it. I'm impressed.
I also lied to a bunch of people when they asked me why you were going to Ocean City, because like I didn't know what the reason was. So I was like, I think he went there as a kid and he loved it.
Big
and,
family
know,
vacation.
So if anyone
spot.
Comes to you and they're like, man, I'm so glad you got to go back to Ocean City. Maybe just lean into it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I told some stories for it because it sounded better. You know what I mean? I was like in the Remember the Titans, like 12 brothers and sisters sounds better than eight. I was like, Kyle had a reason to be there. He's not crazy. He's not flying to New York and driving 10 hours for no reason. But it sounds
like. Oh, we popped a tire in New Jersey on the way down there, too. That was fucking great.
Did you change the tire? You got AAA? What happened?
We actually were right by a fucking, what's it called? Right by a Mavis Discount Tire. So,
And they right hooked it up.
Buddy had the run flats. Yeah, Buddy had the run flats. So
oh, that's good.
Drove a mile down the road.
I learned that that's what you got to have riding around with Bill Simmons. You got to have that. You got to have the ability to drive around and not worry about
I
it.
I think he thinks you could drive longer on those than you actually can. I think the word is 50 miles. He might think it's 500.
I just remember the first time I got in his car, the tire light was on, and I was like, hey, that's what the thing is beeping for. And he was like, shut up. Never did
you never
again.
Heard a run flat state?
Yeah, no, I never brought it up again. But great story. I'm glad you made it back.
Thanks.
We missed you. We all missed you. And you're being a trooper. We all respect that. I wanted to shout out Kevin O'Connor. He took me to Nobu Malibu on Saturday. He had a KOC dinner. Kyle, man,
that
you would have
been
there.
I've been to one of the KOC dinners. I know how he holds court, man.
He
throws down.
And he brings in like a, you know, a random group of people. You know what I mean?
Tommy Alter style.
Very connector. Very Tommy Alter connector. Speaking of, I talked to Tommy Alter. He said he wants to come on One Shining Podcast. Former guest on One Shining Podcast from back
oh
in the day.
God.
Much maligned guest. But we want to bring him back. Maybe we will. But KOC has this dinner. Tommy Alter is not there, but a great group. Kevin, you know, got this table. It had a nice little friend that was a fan of the mismatch that helped get him this table at Nobu Malibu. I'm like, go on, Kevin O'Connor, you know, a little rendezvous going on. And all he wanted to do was see a celebrity. And as we're sitting there, he's looking around. And you know how this works when people are at like the IV or, you know, any of these places, the Craig's, right, where you're supposed to see celebrities. It's a bunch of normal people and they're all looking around. You know what I mean? So it was like a bunch of normal people all looking at each other.
Nobody's looked at the menu yet.
And I'm telling
like,
Kevin,
oh, shit, I need more
I'm
time.
Like, Kevin,
should
I heard,
back in five?
Right.
Yeah.
I was like, Kevin, the girl over there just said that's Kevin O'Connor from The Ringer. You know what I mean? And I'm like, I think you're the most famous guy here. So he looked a little deflated at that point in time. And just as it was happening, right behind him walks in just a fox of a guy. Of course, you know, John Stamos.
Uncle Jesse. That's where my mind went when you said Fox of a guy.
I think George Clooney or John Stamos, like whichever one.
Your fighter.
Yeah, exactly. And they're both hits. And Stamos walks in. He's got his beautiful wife with him. They're looking stunning. They're looking like A-list stars, as you'd expect. They go to the table that is right on the edge of the water, a little glass table right there. And Stamos, there's two chairs on the opposite sides, and then the ocean is this way behind them. He takes his chair, most power move I've ever seen, takes his chair, pulls it to the front so that he is sitting facing directly the ocean, and his wife is right here. He's not facing her anymore. And John Stamos that was the most gangster ever seen, and nobody was as impressed as I was. And I was like, that is how you know the guy is a star. You know what I mean? Yeah. He like walks in, he just decides, this is where my chair goes. And then the Malibu, Nobu people, they shimmied the table so it was diagonal. So now they both could sit and face the ocean. And it was the most power move I've ever seen. Shout out to John
Stamos. Keep that in mind. Regular people could do that too, right?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Don't get carried away.
Don't get carried away. But Stamos shocked me with that.
That's the couple move for any young guys out there, young people out there. If you're out, you want to sit, you don't want to sit across, you know, sit on the side, the opposite, the side, you know, adjacent. I think that's the move.
Booths though, we're going across, right?
Well, you don't have the choice. Table.
The grossest thing I've ever seen when you guys are both on the same side of a booth and nobody else is there. Come on.
If you're on the side of the booth, like I'm thinking someone's getting a hand job. This is not that kind of establishment.
I'm talking. If you're at a tabletop, not in a booth situation.
Okay. Yeah, gotcha.
You know, if you're sitting across, it's just a nice. It's a nice there's intentionality behind that. They feel like you want to be closer to hear what they're saying. You know, it doesn't have to be the side by side booth thing. That's not what I mean.
It also created this if I'm Nobu, I almost move and change the tables to how they set it up. And I call it the Stamos setup or whatever. I mean, it was
Stamos
actually
Stamos alignment.
Right. Yeah. It's like, do you guys want us to Stamos it tonight? You know what I mean? And it was kind of perfect. And Kevin was very excited to see John Stamos. He had a great dinner. It was a great time, but shout out to him for making that happen. Shout out to John Stamos for delivering the entertainment that we all needed at the table, and shout out to Jim Cunningham because he was invited and he didn't come.
I can't believe it.
Yeah, as you'd expect. And then calls me today and goes, "How was dinner? Tell me everything about it."
Like, no, you don't get to know.
No, you don't get to know. I did tell him Stamos came, but I didn't tell him about the table. So. Yeah.
Don't there tell you him. Go. He's not going to listen to
mercy.
This.
Yeah, have mercy. There you go. So shout out there. Any other shout outs, honestly, Kyle, man, I mean, shout out to you for being here. This is great. Love to have you in person, in studio.
How about the Dinglemeister confirmed?
Yes.
Going to St. John's.
I looked at a 24/7 sports article, and it was the top 10 takeaways so far of the offseason. Number one was Rick Pitino is back. And shout out to the guy that wrote it. I cannot remember his name off the top of my head, but if you go to 24/7 sports, look up top 10 takeaways so far of the offseason, the Ricktator. Slick Rick, whatever you want to call him, he's right there front and center. And Jordan Dingle was the first name mentioned. So your guy, Jordan Dingle.
I just know
Dingle,
what is happening now.
I'm
locked in.
Kyle in the garden.
I can't wait to be in New York. And hopefully we'll have some of Kyle's New York friends there. They can tell us about Ocean City and why they hated the Poughkeepsie boys.
We could maybe facilitate some kind of turf war. I'm good for that.
What side should I be on? If you had to, what side is stronger? You know what I mean? I'm not a front runner, but if the Golden State Warriors are there, I might have the Kevin Durant situation.
I think the Poughkeepsie guys have been in way more fights.
Okay. That's my I was leaning Poughkeepsie because we're going to be in Poughkeepsie territory also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, and they're more wild cards, but I don't know who's a better fighter. Maybe the New York City guys, you know, they're scrappers too, but the Poughkeepsie guys, you wouldn't believe how much times they fought each other even.
Right. That's what I am worried about also. I'm worried about like some dissension in the ranks where the Poughkeepsie guys turn on each other. Like they hear something for the New York guy and they're like, nah, fuck that. they go on their own team and I'm on the team that's getting attacked. I'm very concerned. I got to pick a side.
You're at the table with the LA guys though.
Okay.
Those guys were not invited.
So Bill Simmons is at my table.
No. First of all, I think depending on who makes it to the finals, we'll know if Bill's going to the wedding or not.
I think he's
going to
be there. I think the Celtics are making the finals.
Okay. But hold on. But would that change? Because they were the 2 seed, right?
Yeah.
And so if it's the Nuggets, mm-hmm. then that would mean that they're going to play they're going to play games 3 and 4 in Boston.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So, I mean, how's he not going to go to that game?
He's going to go to Boston.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And game 4 would be the
wedding.
Of the wedding.
Yeah.
Can we zoom him in while he's at the game? with Dr. Simmons. Yeah, that'd be great.
Dr. Bill
Simmons. Dr. Bill Simmons and Bill Simmons, both on a Zoom.
I like the guilt gift. I think that's good.
I told you.
I don't mind a guilt gift.
I was telling you, man, you got to get the Lisa Vanderpump guilt gift. That is what we all need in this world. No more shout outs from me, comment, anything else before we get out of here. It's been fun. I wish we could do all these in person.
Yeah.
I'm not putting pressure on you, Kyle, man, but I mean, LA's great.
He's a big downtown LA guy now.
Yeah, he likes downtown.
Yeah, not so much.
I gave him a ride home yesterday. He's close by, so maybe we'll go get some lunch.
He's got his hands on the lock to make sure.
Right, just to be careful, just to keep a head on a swivel. But there you go. This has been One Shining Podcast. Appreciate everyone tuning in. Shout out to Nike. You guys are doing it. You're making things happen. And we will see you later in the week on Wednesday.